Introduce yourself, please.
Hi, I am Laura Kelly. I'm the state senator from the 18th District, which encompasses central Topeka, northern Shawnee County, a little bit of Waubunsee County, and goes into Pott County, St. Mary's, and most of Wamego.
And it is a great pleasure to have you back. We're going to get to Laura's thoughts, but first, the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go.
Joining Laura and me in the KCUR 89.3 production studio is Terry Blastenbry from Merriam. Great to have you back on the show.
Glad to be here.
And so Laura was about 2 years, just about exactly a year ago when we had you on the program. And so welcome back. And I'm looking for an update on your two daughters and, I think, a cat.
Very good. Great memory. Well, the cat is the same. My daughters, Kathleen is my oldest, and she is really based in New York, but is currently in Denver working on the Michael Bennett U.S. Senate race. And my younger daughter, Molly, just finished her residency in Portland, Oregon. I'll be doing some research this summer and then starting as a hospitalist in Vancouver, Washington in September.
It's beautiful up there.
It is absolutely beautiful.
And remind me the cat's name?
Francis.
Francis, and I'm thinking back now, that's your confirmation name.
That is my confirmation name.
Right, because I remember thinking that is the great that is the greatest cat story that we've heard so far on the podcast. So I want to get to some school finance litigation talk and certainly the election. But Terry, I want to start with you and see what's on your mind.
Sure. Getting into the $900 million loan, it's been a question on a lot of my friends' minds. Based on the research I've looked at, apparently this is not a new thing. So people would like to know, some of my friends have asked, how exactly does that work? It seems basically we're borrowing against ourselves. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's really called a certificate of indebtedness. And it is customarily used as a cash flow management system. So there's nothing untoward about it. The problem with this one is that it has never been this high before. $900 million is a whole lot of money.
Sure.
To float to yourself to cover your bills. It's just in anticipation of revenues not meeting expectations.
You know, but here's the question that I have. Does that $900 million really exist somewhere? I mean, is it in a bank account? Is it anticipated to be in a bank account? How does that work?
It is. It is in the pooled money investment board oversees it, and it is some state money, but it is also local money. The cities and counties park some of their contingency funds there.
So the money goes in there, it's invested, and you know, there might be a little bit of a rate of return.
It is very conservatively invested, yes.
Right. And so now does the money actually leave that account, or is it really just an accounting trick?
Well, you know, I believe that it actually does have to leave at times so that we can pay our bills. And it's got to be paid back at the end of the next year.
Right. With interest or no?
No interest.
Right. So I want to get to right off the bat, and boy, don't we talk about this a lot on this podcast, but I want to hear your version of how the equity issue got solved in the school finance litigation case. Came back for a special session, couldn't get it done in the 74 days that you were in a regular session. And I think everybody's kind of got their own truth about how it got solved. So I want to hear yours.
Well, I was sitting there, so I think my truth is pretty accurate. It started off, I believe, with the Democrats, House and Senate Democrats, presenting a plan prior to the special session that essentially put the $38 million in the kitty. We knew that that was the amount that it would take to satisfy the court ruling. When we actually got to session, the Republicans had a plan that would actually have cut school funding again.
By half a percent across the
board
for
each district.
Yes,
half a percent across the board. And that, I think, raised roughly $17 million. I can't remember the exact figure. But And then used a number of other transfers or whatever to reach the $38 million. There was a hearing, a joint hearing of the Ways and Means and House Appropriations Committee, where we heard from a variety of people, including a number of our superintendents, some of who were actually supporting the half percent cut, others who were not, and then a variety of advocacy groups. After that hearing, it became clear that the blowback on that half percent cut was fierce, and that that would never pass muster, particularly in the House. At that point, some of the powers that be went behind closed doors and negotiated the compromise that came out, which actually included a lot of the Democrats' original plan and then a mixture of some other things. Hmm.
Terry, what was it like to sit back and watch this? You know, they come for the special session. They had this plan, the Reichman plan, I think people called it, named after Ron Reichman, mm-hmm. chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, friend of State House Blend. We've had him on this program a lot. And then it goes down in flames. I know that you follow this closely, and I'm wondering what it was like for you to watch sort of the play-by-play as it worked its way to its conclusion.
Well, I have a son that was in Olathe School District. Now he'll be in Shawnee Mission. He has special needs, and we have fought for years to try and get him the services he needs. And our own school, I want to say Olathe took a $1 million hit last year, something along those lines. And then to see that there's a possibility. Now, Shawnee Mission came right out and said we have enough money. If they close the schools, we have enough money to go until the beginning of September, which is great. That's great. They're able to continue those programs. But, I worry that we are constantly, having this battle over school funding. It's been going on as long as I've lived in Kansas, which is almost 5 years now. And so it seems like a constant battle based on the way that the funding is set up for the state. And having been a state employee last year when there were all the budget issues, and working over it at KU, it's just really concerning to see that there's just so much wrangling and rancoring and fighting just to get our state functional. I've lived in several states, and I can't. Other than maybe Illinois, I can't think of any state where it's been as contentious recently. At least our state is functioning. We were able to, the budget was passed. We were able to get moving forward. But it seems like it's a cat fight every April and May with this.
Right. Not nearly as bad as Illinois, not nearly as bad as Pennsylvania, but that ain't saying much for one thing. And Laura, I think Terry brings up a point that I want to explore here, that it felt like that to get to equity, that there was this moment of clarity where finally everybody got into a room, right? Moderates, conservatives, Democrats, the school districts, the districts that were suing the state, and they came up with a deal. And it felt to me like this is the way it's supposed to be. People got into a room. Nobody is ecstatic. Everybody's a little upset. But isn't that compromise?
It is, and it is the way that it should work. But I would suggest that the compromise was ignited not by a desire to solve the problem, but because it was election year, and heaven forbid the schools would close, and we'd have to take responsibility for that and face the public.
Seems more cynical than I expected. I expected to hear from you.
I have to be cynical because I watch how this all works out, and nobody wanted to take the blame for closing the schools. We played chicken with the court for a while, and then realized that we were going to be the ultimate losers if the schools closed down. I think that's why we were able to come so quickly to the compromise.
Terry, how's this cynicism set with you? Because I wanted to think the best, and I too come out of a place of cynicism, but I wanted to think the best. How do you think? How are you feeling about this?
I try to take a pragmatic view when it comes to politics in general. I just watched this very contentious. It seems it's gotten particularly contentious since Governor Brownback took office, and it just seems. I've read Thomas Frank wrote the book "What's the Matter with Kansas?" I think that's the gentleman's name. I read that book when I first moved here, and I was just amazed at how it's kind of come to life. It really is, I'm watching it before my eyes, and I mean I'm originally from Missouri, and I've seen plenty of back and forth there as well. But to come here and just see it just seems like. In a lot of cases here, people are cutting off their nose to spite their face. And there seem, I know my local representative has lamented that there seems to be way too much backdoor dealing and people are getting cut out. You had the one, I think he was a state rep from Shawnee that got into it with Speaker Merrick. And originally threatened to resign and then turned around and took it back.
Representative John Rubin, a conservative Republican, another person who we've had the pleasure of having on this show, but said something on that upset the speaker, and there goes his committee. There goes his committee chairmanship. So
yeah, and
interesting
that,
to watch that.
Yeah, and that sort of thing just seems like, and it's. We've seen it at the national level for some time, but it seems to really be coming down more locally now where it's very hard for people to truly work together and come to a middle to make some hard decisions and compromise. I mean, we simply all can't have our way, but it just seems here in Kansas that even the Republicans are fighting amongst themselves regularly. And so, people like me sit on the sidelines and watch, and, I lean left and tend to vote Democrat. But, if the governing party isn't even getting along, that really concerns me.
I want to get to, I clearly want to get to the election, but I want to get back to school finance. I want to stay with that for just a second. The Supreme Court just scheduled hearings on the adequacy portion of the school finance. This will examine whether, in fact, the state of Kansas is providing enough money to provide an adequate education to every student in Kansas. That's going to happen on September 21st. Two questions for you, Laura. One, there's been charges that these hearings were scheduled for political reasons. And two, do you think that the same spirit of compromise that after the hearing, right, which is, the legislature is going to have to come back and solve this, whatever the Supreme Court does, will there be that spirit of cooperation, or because there's not a election bearing down, will we just go back to the way it used to be? So first on the, do you think that these were scheduled for a political reason?
On the timing of the, of the hearings? I don't think so. I mean, there probably is no good time for the judges to do that. The fact that it's in September, just before the November election, I think is more because of their calendars than the election. That we finished the equity issue. Next on the agenda was going to be the adequacy. I think it's just scheduled because it was time to do that. And it fits with their fall schedule.
Now, do you think that because you were all able to get into a room and solve equity, that we can look forward to that sort of compromise spirit as we move forward with adequacy, which could cost the state $500 million?
This is true. I think the issue of being able to get into a room and compromise across party lines and across chambers is wholly dependent upon what happens in November, August and November this year, and depending upon the types of people who are sitting in the chairs in the legislature come January. Mm-hmm.
You do not have an opponent, is that correct?
That is not correct. I do have an opponent.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Who, that must have happened late? Because
about 11:15, before the noon deadline, yes.
So you've got in a general election opponent.
I do.
So let me ask you, and Terry, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Is this a watershed election year? Is this a year where we could see a sea change in the legislature, do you think?
I hope so, because we have to. In order to get our state back on track and heading towards economic health, we have got to have different people elected who come in not carrying a torch or an ideology that doesn't allow for compromise, but those who are coming in to serve in the best interests of all Kansans.
Well, whatever you want, but what I'm asking is for a political assessment, and do you think that enough seats will change, particularly in the House, I would guess, to get to, you know, to a chamber or chambers where you think it would function like it's supposed to. Do you think it's going
to
happen?
Well, Sam, I hate to jinx it by suggesting that it will. I've got my fingers crossed that the people of Kansas really understand the issues now. And understand that if they want good schools and good roads and a good social safety net, that they have got to elect people with more moderate temperament.
Terry, your friends and neighbors, I mean, are they politically engaged?
I don't know many of my neighbors yet, since I'm in the process of moving. But I would say right now that there's a couple of different factors at play that I think could affect the makeup of the new legislature. The first one being, it's kind of like with the U.S. House and Senate, you know, I love my own person. It's everybody else that's terrible. So I think that could be a potential issue. But I think what could be an even more potential factor is Donald Trump being on the GOP ticket. I don't necessarily think Hillary Clinton's going to win Kansas, but I could certainly see, you know, Ted Cruz won here in Kansas, and so I could see maybe a lot of people just not wanting to come out and vote and stay home. And that there has been a lot of talk about potential, you know, down ballot issues. And I would like to think that it would become more moderate as well, but, you know, it's really going to depend on voter turnout, I think, and, you know, driving more people to the polls.
Quick assessment, Laura, how's the what's the effect of the Donald Trump candidacy going to be, do you think, on turnout and on, you know, Republican participation in the coming election?
Well, we can see that people who ordinarily would be hot-footing it to Cleveland for the convention are pulling back and saying, I'm not going. I don't want to be identified there. You're also seeing some people just changing parties, becoming independents or even Democrats. I think there is a visceral reaction to Donald Trump. There are some who just absolutely adore him and are his biggest fans. But I think the greater majority of particularly moderate Republicans find him offensive. And really are looking for an alternative.
Mm-hmm. I want to change gears here and speculate a little bit about what may happen if, in fact, and I think that if there's going to be a change to a more moderate chamber, that's probably going to happen in the House. Would you agree with that?
I think you're more likely to get to a moderate majority in the House when you combine the moderate Republicans and the Democrats. But I think we'll see a modification in the Senate also. I just don't know if it'll be enough to get us to the moderate majority.
So if that, in fact, comes to be, and it's way too early, I think, to really have a good handle on that. But one of the issues that we've spoken about a lot around this table, a lot of reporting that I've done, has to do with the conceal and carry on Kansas campuses. That doesn't happen until July, about this time next year. So there's one more chance to perhaps repeal that. Do you see that as a possibility if, in fact, there's a change in the Kansas legislature?
Again, that would be somewhat dependent upon what happens in the Senate. I do think that you could see moderation of the House enough to pass the no guns on campus amendments. Whether or not we could get to a majority on the Senate side is much more suspect.
Do you think that there's could it be blocked there? I mean, the it seems to me that the push for conceal and carry on Kansas campuses came from members of the Senate. Do you think that that could moderate somewhat, because it sure doesn't feel like that's a possibility now?
Well, I think that, again, everything is dependent upon what happens in November. And if certain members of the legislature are not reelected, the ones who tend to push the gun issues the most, then there may be nobody to pick up that banner. And then perhaps we can do something.
Mm-hmm. Terry, your final thought or question for Laura Kelly?
Speaking about the equity issue in the school bill, one of the concerns that I've had some friends ask is, will lowered revenues impact the distribution of that money? What if the money's not in the general fund? How is that going to be distributed?
Well, we right now are operating on a block grant system where we just told the school districts for the next 2 years you'll get this amount of money. We have got to put a school formula together. I'm expecting that when all is said and done, it'll look a whole lot like the old school formula, because that worked and it was constitutional. It just, there were times when we didn't fund it adequately. So if we go back to a school formula that is based on reason and common sense, I think the money will be distributed according to that formula. So if there's less money in the formula, there's less money that comes to the school districts. But I think the court in September, when they have the oral hearings and then when they finally make their ruling, will dictate somewhat whether we have got to find another way to boost revenues to the schools.
It's an enormous lift, though, isn't it? I mean, you're going to come back in next January, and the legislature is going to have to deal with adequacy. It's going to have to write a new school finance formula. And even though it may look similar to the previous formula, conservatives are going to demand that there be some outcome-based portion of that. That's an enormous amount of work, isn't it?
Well, actually, some of us have already been doing the work and have put together a formula that we will be presenting to our colleagues in January. I expect that there are others who are doing the same thing. So what we'll need to do in January is to take the work products that are coming from these different people and work together to come up with something that will meet muster, court muster, and will satisfy enough people so we can get enough votes.
Do you think, now there's already a formula that was put out there by Steve Abrams, who is the retiring chairman mm-hmm. of the Senate Education Committee. He's not running for re-election. He's already put a plan forward. Do you think that that's going to be the basis of the conservative plan?
Actually, that's a joint plan that Senator Abrams and Representative Hyland orchestrated. I think that is dead on arrival because one of the things that it does is raise your property taxes by 15 mils. So I don't think anybody is going to want to touch that.
It would take it back to the original mill rate of 35
right.
mils, which the original school finance plan had, but it was cut for some property tax relief at some point.
Well, correct? Right. When we redid, when the legislature redid the school finance formula in 1992, they went away from the 35 mils, took it down to 20 mils, and then created other revenue sources.
So who's putting your plan together? Who's in the room?
Well, I can tell you that I was, and some others.
House and Senate?
Yes, actually. And bipartisan.
Dems and moderates?
Yes.
Now come on, I'm trying to make some news here and you're blocking me. So, you know, work with me here.
I am.
So what's the basis of it? I mean, is it really just let's go back to the old formula, or what sort of modifications are you guys making? Because you still, you know, it's still a compromise, right? You're still going to have to push it through a conservative legislature and get it passed a conservative governor. So what are you doing as you write this to take that into account?
Well, you start with the old school formula. And then you make modifications to that based upon things that you know are important to your colleagues and to the school districts. So we've systematically gone through each segment of the school finance formula and either left it as it was if we thought we could get enough votes for it, or tweaked it if we thought we needed to do that to bring on some other folks to vote for it. And obviously we threw some things in there that are negotiable for us.
So what have you tweaked?
I'm not telling you. I don't want to put my cards on the table right now.
You know, I'm just trying to make a little news here. I'm just a working reporter.
I understand.
Just trying to do my job.
But
a little help, that's all I'm asking for.
That's not how you win at poker, Sam. You got to hold your cards close to your chest.
You know,
and I'm going to do that.
Well, you know, that's what I get for playing craps. That's what I get for playing craps. Wow. You know, once again, I leave this podcast a little bit more informed than when I came in. Terry Blatton Bry from Merriam, I have you to thank for that. Always great to have you back, and I hope you'll be back with us again.
Absolutely.
Laura Kelly, this is where we turn the podcast over to you. You pick our walk-off music. Now, a year ago, you went with Van Morrison, Brand New Day, and I'm wondering what's in your head this morning.
Oh, you know, I forgot to think about this time because you forgot to remind me.
We'll wait.
My Wild Irish Rose.
Wow. You know, before we started the podcast, we were just talking about bagels, and now you call My Wild Irish Rose. I couldn't be any happier about that. Laura Kelly, State Senator from Topeka, thanks for coming over. It's always a pleasure. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Find us at kcur.org/statehouseblend. You can also listen to us every Tuesday at 11. They clear out a little room for us over there on Up to Date. You can follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff, and Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the craziness over there in Missouri. You can follow him. He's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff, and I'll see you around the radio.
For my wild Irish rose, the sweetest flower in the cross. You may touch everywhere.